But right now, I want to bring in Emily Rowland, John Hancock, Investment Management Co-Chief Investment Strategist, and Torsten Slok, Apollo Global Management Chief Economist. We should mention Apollo is Yahoo's parent company as well. As we go through these numbers, guys, I'm going through some of the other numbers aside from that 467,000 gain in non-farm payrolls. I see the participation rate was little changed, 62.2%. I think that average hourly earnings change is definitely a big deal here. The telework figure that we heard Saz mention rose to 15.4%, people who teleworked or worked at home at some point because of the pandemic. Torsten, I want to go to you first with sort of your economist reaction to this number, which is puzzling to me given the effect of the coronavirus in the month.
I agree, Julian. Also, ADP on Wednesday was minus 301,000, and now we get a difference of 700,000-800,000 in terms of what ADP was saying. It's a quite a significant number in terms of saying, well, maybe the economy is actually now on the other side of Omicron. And maybe therefore, from a Fed perspective, if you think about the dual mandate that the Fed has to reach full employment, and the Fed also had to have inflation at 2%, on both two fronts, it looks like the economy is overheated. We now have relatively strong employment growth, both here in January and also the rise numbers, as you mentioned, for December. And on top of that, average hourly earnings, as you also just highlighted, is now 5.7%. That's very strong wage growth. So there may be some compositional smaller nuances in terms of why it was so high. But the bottom line still is that these are very strong numbers. And this is certainly something that puts the Fed more into play for the coming meetings.
Emily, Torsten mentioned that the economy looks overheated off of this jobs report. I see where he's coming from, but that can't be good news for the bulls, right?
No, I agree with the idea here that great news, and it's great news as far as the economy goes, don't get me wrong, may be a challenge for markets. And we're seeing that with futures moving lower. We're seeing the 10-year treasury yield spike higher. The entire yield curve is moving up. I'm looking at the 2-year note as well, which has moved about 7 basis points higher since before the report. So, you know, we're seeing this market potentially start to think about 50 basis point rate hike in March, which up until this report, I think was pretty much off the table given the Fed speakers that we've heard over the past week. But clearly the Fed's got to move here. I'm looking at wage growth as well, exceeding expectations. You know, I think that there was an idea before this report that maybe we would see this soft patch, maybe a negative number as far as jobs go. You know, maybe wage growth would decline given that mix shift or the fact that Omicron has impacted those lower wage jobs. None of that came through here. And I think the Fed's now under even more pressure to move.
Torsten, do you think this jobs report puts a 50 basis point rate hike back on the table for March? And what do you think that means to markets?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think the markets at the moment, of course, are trading some days on, oh, no, the Fed is going to raise rates. Other days, they're trading on, well, fundamentals are still relatively good. And remember why the Fed is raising rates, because nominal growth is still going to be strong. So I think we'll continue to see this volatile environment over the next at least 7 months and potentially for the rest of this year. In other words, I think what we have seen in January was not just a bump on the road, and now we're off to the races and the market, the stock market will go up and credit spreads will narrow. I think that we are very much in a new regime where the Fed is beginning to raise rates. That has some significant consequences, in particular, of course, for how we think about risky assets more broadly. But it also has the broader backdrop that nominal growth is still strong. So I think we'll continue to see this confusion in the market where some days the market likes that nominal growth is strong. And the next day, the market doesn't like that on the back of that strong nominal growth, the Fed is going to raise rates. So that's why the volatile regime we're in will continue.
Yeah, there's a high level of unpredictability, obviously. Listen, I know we're still digesting jobs, but I want to bring up CPI again because we are looking for a year-over-year gain in headline CPI reported next week of 7.3% or 5.9% at the core. Torsten, I want to follow up on this 50 basis points idea. This report combined with fill in the blank, blank inflation would equal 50 basis points. Do you think that, for example, that 7.3% headline number or 5.9% core number would be enough for the Fed to act?
So I think at least this is something that certainly, and including combined with this very strong report here, would certainly make them think hard about how quickly do we need to move. I mean, let's not forget that the whole goal for the Fed is to keep inflation at 2%. So if we get 7.3, which is what the consensus expects here for January, then that will certainly be way above. And even on the core inflation numbers, both on core PCE and core CPI, if we get anything in the 5 to 6% range, that's certainly also way, way above where the Fed would like inflation to be. So in some sense, the fact that the Fed is both talking about raising rates and also relatively quickly beginning to run down the balance sheet is really the double whammy where they're beginning to tighten financial conditions. If markets disagree and continue to just go up and say, oh, this is not relevant for us, or if markets also in credit also continue to see some spread tightening, I think that the Fed will conclude, well, if financial conditions don't tighten through lower stocks and wider credit spreads, then we just have to raise rates even more. So that's why a debate about how many rate hikes we'll get this year is hugely dependent on also what your assumptions are about what will happen to the stock market and credit spreads. Because the Fed's goal, let's not forget this, the Fed's goal with this whole exercise is to cool down revenue growth in corporate America, to cool down GDP growth with the ultimate target of cooling down inflation. And given where those inflation numbers are, including what we'll get next week, there's certainly reasons for the Fed to move a little bit faster than what we thought just a half an hour ago.
Emily, off a number like this, what's one sector an investor should be looking at as a good buying opportunity?
Yeah, so we're looking for parts of the market that have strong operating leverage, great pricing power, and periods of elevated inflation, that's where you want to go. So think about businesses and sectors that have high fixed costs. So a property, plant, and equipment or a mine. There's not a lot of additional investment in that fixed cost, but those prices can be passed along to consumers. So we're finding that in areas like industrials in the US. We're finding that in areas like US mid-cap equities. So we want to be able to have that sensitivity to higher rates. Again, as Torsten mentioned, the economy continues to accelerate. We want to be able to play that with some economically sensitive areas, but we have to remember that not all value sectors are created equally. So we're being selective within value. We actually see the economic environment slowing to more modest levels as the year continues. I know it's hard to think about that with a 7% inflation print, but that's where we see things going. We do see inflation ultimately moderating. We do see growth slowing. We have a fiscal drag that we're being presented with now as we head into 2022. So for that, we want to pair that carefully selected value with quality growth. Businesses, sectors that have great balance sheets, lots of cash, good organic earnings drivers, earnings stability. And that brings us to areas like US technology stocks, not unprofitable growth ones, but more in the quality space. So it's really about that pairing of value and quality for the rest of this year.
You guys are going to stick around. Emily Rowland, John Hancock, Investment Management Co-Chief Investment Strategist, and Torsten Slok, Apollo Global Management Chief Economist. We're going to be right back to talk more about this astonishing number, 467,000 jobs added in January. The numbers revised up for December and November as well. Unemployment rate 4% and year-over-year average hourly earnings growth of 5.7%.